Well, bless the Lord. Good evening. And I just am grateful to continue in our study of the tabernacle. We're covering the priest's garments tonight. And I was pondering on some things about the priests and their garments. And, they didn't buck the things of the Lord. They obeyed him. Now, some of them for the wrong motives, but many from a good and righteous motive. But they could have said, well, I don't like that color, or I don't think we should do that. I think we don't need so many layers, or it's too hot to do that. I'll just do this, whatever. They could have adjusted like so many people do. They take the directions of God, and they just kind of adjust it a little bit to what fits them and keeps them comfortable. But, one of the key things that I hope that we can pick up from the study, don't get lost in all the details here. The details are important because they all have spiritual meaning. These physical things of old have tremendous spiritual meaning today. And a key ingredient here is obedience. Obedience is a key. It's a thread that runs through all the things that God had his people do. And we're just going to have to get used to it. I like what Carolyn said earlier, that we are like a sponge. And because, often we're compared to crushed grapes and you get the good wine and everything. But she just was thinking on this sponge. The sponge has to be totally squeezed and wrung dry in order to soak up stuff. So to soak up the stuff of the Lord, he has to squeeze out our stuff, wring us of our stuff, and soak up his. And then he just doesn't have us all fat with his stuff. It has to be squeezed out. We're supposed to be, broken bread and wine for others. He's going to pour it out from us to others. Squeeze that out again and then soak him up and then squeeze it out. It all comes down, though, to obedience. And obedience is a hard thing because the Adam nature is a very powerful force. It is, God says, enmity to him. It is not born. We are not born with a nature that automatically leans to God. We are born with a nature that is at odds with God. It doesn't think like him, feel like him, or want like him. So you have that powerful push within. Now, once you're saved and you get that Spirit of God indwelling in you, you now have something that can overcome that. When you walk by the Spirit, you cannot walk by the flesh. So every day in our lives, we have a choice to obey. Which master am I going to serve? And both of them are powerful. But God is more powerful than the sin nature. But you have to choose which one. And that is called obedience. Now, sometimes we are going to be asked to do things we don't want to do. It's going to make our work harder. It's going to make our day longer. It's going to be doing something we don't think we want to do or that we're suited for. And I often think in the beginning of my walk with the Lord and as I was learning and understanding, there was a period of time when I was working as a nursing instructor at one of the local colleges. And I absolutely loved that position. I didn't realize it then, only as I came through some structure in the Lord, I realized then I was so pridefully puffed up in my skills and my abilities and who I was as a person and didn't know it. So God had to kind of help me get through that. Well, I remember walking across the courtyard one time. I had my little white lab coat over my lovely little business clothes, and I'm heading to my office where I had my secretary and I just come back from the hospital making assignments for all my students, and I have my little briefcase in my hand, and I'm walking over the courtyard going, God, I love this job. And a couple of the students said, hi, Miss Bugsley, how are you? I said, oh, doing great, I play tennis at lunch, I had the summers off, I'm making nice bucks, I'm thinking, this is good, because it was a stepping stone for me to my doctorate in nursing, because I could smell my office at USF. I go, yes, I just love this. Thank you, Lord, whatever. And as I'm walking across that courtyard, this cold feeling came over me because I said, oh, I love this too much. I went, oh, no, I don't really like it. I'm trying to fool God. You know, oh, no, I don't really love it that much. I mean, I really like it, you know. And I'm trying to talk my way back. I mean, I was just so, oh, God, I love this job. Now, there's nothing wrong with loving your job. There's nothing wrong with being very good at what you're gifted in. But I had some connections, some wires there that had to be disconnected in order for me to do the work God called me to do. There was nothing wrong with being a nurse, nothing wrong with being up there as a teacher. They called us associate professors or whatever at the college. There's nothing wrong with making another step to another level and have a more broad expanse and a teaching ability. Nothing wrong with any of that. But that isn't what God had for me, but I didn't know that. But then he put it on my heart not to renew my contract when it came around, coming up on my third year up there. And I just said, oh God, don't you understand something? This is how I make my living. This is where I get my paycheck. These are my plans. I've got a retirement I've got to worry about. I've got some things I've got to do. This is 30 years ago, you know. And I'm going, Lord, don't you understand? This is where I get my paycheck. What do you mean, don't renew your contract? I thought, well, there must be something bigger he has for me then, right? Sure, that must be it. So, that was in February of 1980. And I just told my superiors there, because they're all getting in line to do who's going to do what and teach where and all their, you know, all of our raises and all this stuff. And I just wanted to give them enough time so they'd be able to get someone else. And I said, I'm not going to be renewing my contract. So you see, in that position, when you don't renew your contract, it means you got some that contract someplace else. So they said, oh, where are you going? And I said to them, I don't know yet. And they thought I was lying, because you never give up a job. This is the primo job in nursing. You know, it's your stepping stone to the heights of what you want to do. You never not do it, you know. I said, I don't know. And I really didn't. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, no problem. You know, God has something bigger and better. Well, after I went through my savings and after no other jobs were coming my way and I wasn't hearing anything from God, it was the most debilitating time of my life, I think. And I actually knew a Christian friend. Now, I had rent to pay, I had bills that were coming up, and I went, oh, I'm really, you know, I had sent my resume all over everywhere. Hiring freezes, you know, because I wasn't going back into nursing. I kind of understood that. So I thought I was going to have, you know, maybe work for a legal firm to do their medical stuff. I mean, I had all these, I just put nothing. I got zero. So I said, oh, Lord, I have to get a job here. A Christian friend happened to be the maintenance head over at the University Square Mall. He said, I need a maintenance worker. I go, well, I need some money. I'll do it. And I did it because it was from 5 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock in the morning, and I figured nobody would see me. No one I knew would see me. So I thought, gulp, what are you doing, Lord? I didn't know. I said, I got to have some money. So I'm just doing this little job on the side. Now here I am, I've got a master's degree in nursing. I'm wanting to go get my doctorate. And I'm cleaning out cigarette butts from the butt can. And I'm vacuuming the carpets, because they used to have carpet over there. They have tile now. And I had the dust and clean and all this vile, low-level stuff. And I'm going, oh, no. I had worked there a couple of months. And all of a sudden, early in the morning, they had a coffee shop that was open, so some of the mall, only that was open, but some people came in early, like around, you know, 8:30 to this little coffee shop. All of a sudden, I'm there in my work clothes, you know, the old blue shirt and blue pants, and I'm scooping out butts from the thing going, oh God, please, I don't want anybody I know to see me. And down the hallway starts coming one of my former nursing students. Right then and there, immediately I knew what was happening. I said, you're humbling me, God. I know what you're doing. I took my breath away. He comes walking down. He didn't realize who I was until he got up closer. And he looks at me. Now they all knew I must have been heading off for something bigger and better, because I didn't renew my contract. This guy comes up to me. He looks at my head. He looks down to my feet. And he looks back up to my head again. And he says to me, Miss Pugsley. He had a little accent. Miss Pugsley. He goes, how are you doing? And I said, well, I'm doing pretty good. And he went, Oh, now I'm sure that went, you know, that went through the wires. You know, I'm sure he couldn't get back fast enough. Just debased to all debasing, you know. And I figured this can't last much longer. It went on for about a year. And I just said, okay, Lord, whatever. And then another wonderful job opening came up with the best employer in the entire world. That's Mark Parsons, because nothing else was open. All my resumes, I kept sending them out all the time, nothing. There was a freeze. And I remember saying to God, you have to freeze all of Hillsborough County to prove a point to me. You know, what are you going to? So sometimes you're just going to have to do something you don't want to do. You are just going to have to do it, but it has a reason, and it might be a reason you don't know, but it's going to be good. It's going to be filling. Just obey. So I went to work for Mark. Cleaned offices for 2 years, because that was before he was in the landscape business. So I'm at night. Real estate offices, all these smoky things, and toilets. Oh my gosh, those people must have explosions. They must put dynamite in there and then just have it blow up. I'm going, this is the most god-awful job in the world. So I'm in there cleaning these toilets and cleaning out this stuff, and God, yuck, it was absolutely gross. And I go, okay, God, I'm doing it. I can remember being so embarrassed. I said, I want to get a business card that puts the professional cleaners. And I was going to put all my, you know, RN, BS, MA, and all these little initials behind my name, because I was feeling so like, you know, worm dung. I had no identity of importance. And God says, good. Good. I want you to love me. I want you to be joyful. I'm not stripping you just to strip you. I want you to learn obedience with joy. Okay. Then he switched over to lawns. Oh, God have mercy. I thought I would die. My skin tans a lot. I get out there and I go, oh my gosh, they're going to start checking me for an alien, you know? I mean, I got all tanned and my skin is getting all burned and brown. I look like an Indian woman after a while. You know, I would smell terribly. I remember one time going up to a 7-Eleven to stop and get a little snack and a soda or something, because we would do that. And I stood up there, I could smell my own stink, the sweat. And I mean, because you're soaking wet by, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. You're soaked with all the heat and the sweat out there and the working. 6 years I worked in the fields, mowing and being, you know, a crew supervisor. Those guys gave me the hardest time. They would hide behind the buildings I'd find, and that was my job. I used to do that in the military. I know where you're hiding. Get out here and get to work. Oh, and then I go back and lie to him and say I was being unfair and unkind. Oh, it was a fight the whole way. But I remember at that counter, when I stood with my own stink, a guy comes up to get something, and he came up and stood right beside me, and then I saw him just take a few steps back. I mean, the smell was very bad. You know, just a real sweaty, smelly. And I remember thinking, see, I was getting, I said, it's okay, God. I love you. You love me. You got me on a journey. I didn't feel that inside feeling of wanting to talk to the guy, say, listen, I'm on a journey with God. I'm really an intelligent woman. I got a lot of degrees. I really know my stuff. You know, I'm important. You don't think that, but I'm important. I didn't feel that anymore. I always thought I had to tell somebody, I'm not really what you think. This cleaning, this toilet thing, it's just temporary, you know. But I didn't feel that. I just said, that's life. And finally, I remember one time when I started working in the office for him for a few days a week, which, you know, was out of the field. And I said, well, okay. I remember going to the office. It was like 9 o'clock in the morning. I'd open up the office door. And I said, Lord, I'm settled. I'm settled in my heart. If this is where you want me to serve, ministering to the customers, ministering to the crews, if that's what you want me to do, then, you know, I was here and, you know, but it was before, you know, I became a minister here, but I was working with Frank and teaching on some Wednesday nights. I said, that's it. I'm settled. I'm okay, Lord. You just do it. I'm not kidding you. Within a few weeks, that's when Frank said, we're going to have a school here, and you're going to be the lead teacher. It was like when I resigned my life to just do whatever I had to do, it didn't make any difference. God says, now we can start using you. And then for 13 years I was in that schoolroom. That was another whole lesson. That was another whole learning time. Preparing, preparing, preparing. Chopping down. But obey, obey, obey. Now Mark paid me a significant amount more than what school did. And so it was just like, you're up here, and then God says, don't look at that. Look at what God's doing. Look at who He is. Look at what's going on. God, you're supposed to be getting closer to God. This whole journey is obedience, and God is important. Our worthiness only comes from what Jesus did. And we're in God's family. That's what's so important. So God, I just got to keep saying this over and over again. Don't be surprised when God diminishes things in your life. It's not to punish you. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you've made bad decisions. But we want to be wise. We don't ever want to have faith throw away common sense. You don't sit on the couch and say, well, God hasn't shown me to go to work. Well, if you're a mother and father and you got kids in your house, you better be out there working, because you can't pay Tico in tomatoes. You're going to have a cash basis here in this society. You need to get to work. But where and how and why? God's going to show you all that. But don't be surprised if you're going to have to do some things for a while that you didn't plan on doing. But God is a good God. So the whole point of those comments is obedience is better than sacrifice. Because obedience to God is the only way that we can show Him that we love Him. Because you can't give God anything. We give each other good gifts. We do favors. There's nothing any of us can do for God. He is it all. He has it all. Heaven is His home and earth is His footstool. What are we going to give Him? New pair of shoes? Another shirt? I mean, He is the heavenly garment. He is the all in all. He created all that we see. You just go out and look at the sky on some starry night. What glory! And that was on purpose created by God as an adornment for us to look at. Not some big bang junk out there. God has created us and created this. And because of man's sin, a curse is upon man and this earth. But God isn't letting it rest in our hands. He has sent Jesus Christ, who then has brought to us the new covenant, where there's an indwelling of the Spirit. Not the tabernacle, not the physical, not the kings and the judges and the patriarchs, but the living God and you direct. No more veil, no more junk. But sin now, it interferes with that. Doesn't stop your salvation, but it's going to interfere with it. You don't want that. So you have to live a life in obedience to God. I will obey. God, I just need to know it's you. I just need to know it's you. So sometimes things can be, that old adversary knows that. He's going to want to put extra things in your bag, so to speak, to confuse the issues in our life. He's going to want to bring all sorts of people and places and things around to actually confuse and muddy the waters. Our whole idea is to obey God. Now we're going to see what the priests did in terms of their obedience to God as they continued. Now we're talking about the garments of the priesthood, and I'm going to put up that picture again of the high priest. And it's not adornment. It's not because God wanted to look fancy. And yet there are many religions today, many facets of Christianity, as well as other false religions that are out there. And they wear all these garments and they have all these things. But God did this for meaning. And as we finish up our study tonight, to have this meaning, last week we covered all of the gemstones that were in the ephod and all the powerful meaning on that. Go back and review that, those of you who have that. Plus it's on the website on the audio, so you can always go back and review those portions if you missed any, if you want to review some of that. And also there's pictures of the, for those that are listening by audio, there's pictures of the priest here in all of his holy garb that is posted on the website. You can see that. Now, one of the things that the high priest wore were white linen. We call them trousers. It was an undergarment. It was like his long underwear, so to speak. It was worn underneath everything, and it was amazing that it's white. See, so much of this stuff was white, and that undergarment was a measure of God to show that underneath everything you are and what you do needs to be purity. There needs to be a foundation of purity. It also was to give and portray a sense of modesty and decency. Not just in your dress, but who you are in God. To be clean, to be holy, in order to worship God. And then the white linen coat. And you can see this is the white linen coat that went over everything. You can't see the trousers there underneath garment, but you can see that it's a sleeved outer white linen coat. with the sash around that. We'll get to that in a little bit. And that's the ephod again on the chest. We covered that last week, but that's all the gemstones, 12 gemstones. And remember the last gemstone, the 12th gemstone, that last gemstone was the jasper, that blue-green mineral stone. But it's also the first stone in the New Jerusalem, which shows that continuity between the earth and the heaven. This is a long journey, but it's taking us from here to be there with the Lord. Now, the white linen coat, it looked common. This was another point, too, that I like to bring out. That was a common-looking garment just taken by itself, in comparison to the other pieces that had the beautiful blue and the colors and the gold that was embedded into the linens. This was just a plain white linen, loose-fitting garment. It looked kind of common. But up close, you could see that it was fine linen. And that gives us a picture of Jesus. From a distance, he was just a common man. You could not pick him out of a crowd. And I brought in a picture one time a number of years ago that was like a... those guys that, you know, when they find the skulls and stuff, and then they kind of figure out what the face would look like. Well, from some of the fairly typical skulls in that Mediterranean area that Jesus did, so roughly a 30-year-old male in that area would roughly look like, and the picture was nothing like the little blonde-haired California-looking surf boy that most of the pictures of Jesus are. This was a rough-hewn carpenter with a scruffy beard and dark hair and dark skin, a very swarthy fellow. And that's exactly who he would have been. I mean, this blonde Scandinavian looking guy would have really stuck out. That wasn't Jesus. You know, he was Mediterranean. You know, he was from that section of the earth. Dark hair, dark skin. And his hands were probably just all just big, thick fingers from always cutting wood and sawing and hammering. And they didn't have the electric tools they do today. This was hard labor. The muscles of his fingers are probably better than most people's legs and arms today. But he probably had calluses and cuts and bruises. And he probably stunk. They didn't use deodorant. They didn't wash frequently. The water was very scarce. They put oil on their skin and then scraped it off with sharp little edged like stone things just to get the dirt and the stuff off. You know, I mean, this is not the picture of some sweet little smelling like a rose looking like a, you know, Hollywood star. This is Jesus. He was a common man. Now, this is a common outfit until you get up close. And then you can see that it is a beautiful piece of fine linen. And again, like we said, and it's white to denote the purity of Christ. And it was very, very powerful because the undergarment, the high priest was the only one that wore the undergarment. This is underneath a tunic, but the regular priests, that was their outer garment. And that kind of tells us a little something. The righteousness was the foundation of the undergarment of Jesus, because he's in us. Our only merit can be claimed, not from our own righteousness, but from the righteousness of Jesus. So we're like, our outer garment is who he is. But the undergarment has to be who he is. So what people see should be the same purity of what's inside. So we play the role of priest and high priest. We have that distinction to be both. It's absolutely powerful. Now the sash or the girdle, this thing, very, very colorful, lots of colors to it with the purples and the violets and the reds in it. It was an embroidered belt called the Garment of Dignity and Honor. Now that was only seen on the Day of Atonement, when it's worn on the outside. Otherwise it was worn underneath the stuff. And it kind of gives us a little message. Even though you couldn't see it, it was still there. It was to gird the loins. And I want to make two comments. One about why it's called girding the loins, and the other one was that even though you don't see it, the thing is still there. The loins are still girded, even though you don't see it. And it reminds us that if we're not really conscious that the Lord is ministering to us, we can still know that He's always there. We might not be aware of. So things are not coincidences in our lives. God is taking care of us. He is forming us and shaping us and leading us. And sometimes we're just like little children, oh, I don't know. And sometimes He'll just... We won't really necessarily know we're going. We're having forward progress with Him. We won't know necessarily where He's bringing us. But because we can trust Him to kind of close those doors and keep those other pathways out of the way, He can actually, if you give your life to Him, He can actually lead you in the way He wants you to go by virtue of really orchestrating some circumstances that make the changes in our lives. But the other thing about girding the loins, and I've taught this before when we talk about the armor of the Lord, the loins in both the male and the female are the inner portions down here in the pelvic area. That's considered the loins. And that is where, in the male, life, the seed of life is produced. And in the female, once implanted, that is where that seed of life can grow. So it's like a perfect picture. You have to gird your loins with the truth and the purity of the Lord, because that is where the life of God needs to be implanted, and that life produce life. We have to be able to not just have all of this stuff inside us as knowledge. We need to be able to have this come out in the power of God to bring life to others. So life seed, life producing and life nurturing. Life protecting, life forming. Very, very powerful. So that was the sash and the girdle. Now, on top of that was then this blue tunic. That's very easy to see. It goes over the head, comes down the front, and comes down the back. Now, that was a symbol of office and authority. Any of the people that were around the tabernacle, which was in the wilderness, or the temple, which was the permanent tabernacle, eventually in Jerusalem, they would automatically know who the high priest was because of his attire. Well, shouldn't the world automatically know us as the high priest? Not because of the physical clothes we're wearing, but because of what? Because of the life we lead, because of the purity, because of the humility, because of the obedience, because of the joy, because of the power, because of the vitality, because of the strength. Now, some people are going, oh, good grief. I'm not like that. I guess I must not be saved. Don't go there. Every day you're not going to have that, but you can work towards that. But every day you're totally obedient to God and have His Spirit rule, yeah, that will come out. But boy, I tell you, I don't know about you, but I have bad hair days some days. I'm not feeling so strong. I'm not feeling so wise. I'm not feeling so good. But all that is just big light should go on and say, you know, that's just the Adam nature. Either talking to me or ruling or wanting to rule again. Just get rid of it. Just say no. No sad sack in Jesus. Hard things happen. Cry with those. Weep with those who weep. Mourn with those who mourn. Laugh with those who laugh. It's not a matter of being inappropriate. It's a matter of being on target with the Lord. But it's a vibrant and a vital life. So this symbol, this tunic, was a symbol of office and authority. And the blue in color truly should remind us of the heavens. And blue, remember, was in abundance in the tabernacle. The curtains had some blue in them. There was a blue cloth that covered each piece of the furniture when they transported it, because they did have to move it, you know, when the Lord showed them to move to the next camp area while they're in the wilderness. 40 years they did this in the wilderness. Whoa! You know, that would have bugged me. Because I can read a map. I might not be the best, but I can read a map. As a matter of fact, my trail name on the Appalachian Trail hiking is Mapmaster. Because I'm always reading the map, I have no idea where I am. But even I know the difference, because when I look at a map in the Bible or in a study guide someplace, I can see, oh, gee, Egypt's over here, the Promised Land's over here. Roughly take you 2 weeks. You know what I'm saying? The distance. In travel, on foot, is going to take you time, but it wasn't a very long time. They took 40 years making a 2-week journey. Don't be surprised that our journeys with the Lord aren't going to be quick and simple. People come to know the Lord and they think, boy, that's it. We got heaven, glory, and power all in just a little while. I had a woman one time, I just heard an update on her. She's in jail. All of her four children are with state custody. She just couldn't get off the cocaine. On and on and on. Terrible life. Into drugs. Into prostitution. Just, you know, she did love her kids, but just could not take care of them. All sorts of stuff. Just a life messed up totally. Well, I picked her up one time and another lady to help them out, bring them over to do some things, to register kids in school, pick up food stamps, and all the rest of the stuff that goes on in life out here. And one woman went in to take care of her kids' school things, and this lady is sitting in my van. And she was telling me all the woes and the troubles, and I said, well, honey, I said, you know, have you ever heard anything about you and Jesus? I said, there is a remedy to all this stuff, and it's not the legal, physical stuff you're going to. And she goes, yeah, I tried Jesus once for 2 weeks. He didn't work. I went, well, this is going to have to be a long conversation. You know, but this precious soul, you minister to, you pray for them, and they're still going to make some of their decisions. I'll tell you, obedience is key. You obey God, He's going to change your life. Now, there's another woman that was with her. Her life's totally changed. She's married. She has kids. Both she and her husband have jobs. They're all off drugs. Every single thing has changed. They're studying Tony Evans materials and trying to find a good church, and they moved up to Tennessee. I mean, we're talking really good here. But you got to do this the Lord's way. So when they were moving the furniture and stuff, so what I was starting to say was that, gee, I would have looked at that and said, why are we taking so long here? Now, you say, well, yeah, I would have done the same thing. Well, I'm not back then. I'm up here. I'm actually saying the same thing to God today. What's taking so long? How come this and that? I don't ask him that too much anymore. I say, it takes as long as it takes. Just like teaching kids stuff. Some kids learn the day you tell them. Some other kid 6 weeks later still goes, I don't know. Everyone's different in their learning, in their understanding, in their capacity, and God knows that. So it's obedience that's important. They put this blue cloth while the furniture was being moved, because they had to move again. I imagine they told their children when they said, why are we moving again? We just got here. Well, because God has said to them. The fire at night, the cloud during the day, when it moves, we move. We pack up, we go. When it stops, that's where we stop. So, okay. There was a blue cord even fastened the gold diadem to the head of the priest. You can see on the turban up here and the diadem, there's a blue cord there that fastens it right to the head. And we'll get to that before we finish up tonight. Blue cord secured the breastplate to the ephod. There's some blue cords that run along the side over there. And this blue is in such abundance that it should remind us that God's grace is abundant all over. So some of this blue of the heavenlies and reminding of God was done on purpose by God all throughout the tabernacle to show us He is everywhere. Now this robe, really wonderful point is it was seamless. It was all in one piece. And boy, if that isn't a picture of who God is, there is no beginning, there is no end. Now, a lot of the materials were not seamless. They had seams because that is the easiest way. You got a piece of material cut here, piece of material cut here, parts the front, parts the back, sew them on the edges, you've got a nice little garment. It is much harder to weave this thing seamlessly. So it was done by craftsmen, and it was done perfectly with these perfect materials. So just absolutely powerful. Now also you'll notice on the bottom of the tunic here, there's some little decorations. And the purple things are made with yarn, and they're made in the shape of pomegranates, like little apple-like thingy. So the pomegranates, and then there's a pomegranate, a yarn pomegranate, and a bell, a yarn pomegranate and a bell. And those are in each opposite one. Every other one is a bell, every other one a yarn thing. And that goes all around the bottom of the tunic. You could actually hear the priest when they were coming because the little individual bells would be ringing. So, now the pomegranate, pardon? The little bell would be ringing. There you go, that was a nice little bell was ringing. Nice little phone went off here and we have a nice little, thank you for adding that. The pomegranates were of blue, purple, and scarlet. Again, those colors that we talked about the other day. And the pomegranates are a fruit. And they are to symbolize the fruitfulness in Jesus. But when you look and say, well, what are the little pomegranates about? You know, what are the bells and the pomegranates? Well, The pomegranates are the fruitfulness of Jesus. The bells symbolize the ringing out of the wonderful good news of the gospel of peace. But these little yarn things are in between. And guess what? So the bells won't be hitting each other. And that really touched my heart. Because we're supposed to be like the bells, ringing out the good news of the gospel of peace, the gospel of salvation, that new covenant. But guess what? We're all individual bells. God doesn't want us banging into each other, and people do that. He doesn't want churches, and they're doing this. Some of the churches ought to review some of this stuff. The churches are banging into each other. Oh, this is the one church, and that's the other church, and this one isn't, and that one's wrong, and this one's terrible. Don't believe that. Come over here. No instruments, some instruments. No singing, some singing. Oh, my gosh. On your knees, on one knee, on two knees, certain days, certain this. My gosh, the bells who are supposed to be proclaiming the gospel of Christ are banging into each other. But what did God put on the... This just blows my mind. I mean, He's talking to us today. He put those on there for a reason. The fruitfulness of Jesus Christ will keep every bell not banging into each other, but just doing the purpose it was supposed to ring out the gospel of salvation and the peace in Jesus Christ. That just absolutely, powerfully knocks me over when I think on these things. And yet, I sense pretty much that the fullness of what this all means, they didn't know. You know, more blessed are those to believe and see not. You know what I mean? They were just literally in the obedience mode. If God said bells, you put bells. If He says put a yarn pomegranate in between, you put a yarn pomegranate in between. And if your son asks you why, you'll look as puzzled as your father did to you. You know, say, I don't know why. God just said to. Now, maybe they understood, but I doubt it if they did, because the fullness of the revelation by the Spirit of God was not indwelling in them back then as it is in us. So it's powerful to understand this. Now, the bells were not worn by the high priest on the Day of Atonement. To see, these bells were to be a symbol of, you know, the gospel of peace. But Jesus hadn't come yet when these high priests were here. So that was just to let the people know that the high priest was around. You know, straighten up your act like. You know, just. And this is where some of the nature of man can kind of get involved. You can put on a show. Did you ever have that happen to you? Someone knows you're a Christian, and you walk into the room and they're telling a dirty joke, so they stop, or they're swearing. That used to happen to me as a chaplain when I worked with the Army National Guard. I'd be standing there with a group, you know, there'd be, you know, 10 or 12 of the guys around there, and they're swearing and they're cursing and they're carrying on. And all of a sudden, one of them would realize that I was there, and they'd go, "Oh, I'm sorry, chaplain." And I just tell them, say, "Listen, you really don't offend me. It's God you got to work out a lot with, not me. You don't offend me." I used to tell them, "I'm just a sales rep." And they used to laugh, you know. But it's really true. Sometimes these people would be in good behavior when the high priests were around. Sometimes the high priests would be in good behavior when the people were around. Such foolishness. And God knew it. But His mercy covered it all back then, because Jesus had not died yet. All of sin was not taken care of yet. So He had a great deal of mercy in a different way with all those who were before Him. So just keep that in mind. Now, He didn't wear the bells because He didn't want to bring any attention to Himself. He didn't want to have anyone know anything. So in the Day of Atonement, the whole of everything, when He went into that holy, most holy place, the holiest of holies, when He went in there, it was without the bells that time. And it was in complete humiliation and subjection unto the Lord. Now, the last thing for this evening is and for this study, is the turban and the headband. And the turban is, and pretty familiar with that, it's the head covering wrapped around, look like a towel wrapped around the top. Many places in the Middle East still wear that. And it's a towel wrapped around because sometimes you have to take some of that towel off and use it to cover your neck. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons that they have that. But the high priest back there wore the turban covering his head, because that was a sign of subjection. The covering of the head gives a signal of subjection. And now some people today still require it in religions that, now back then, a woman's hair was her covering, but a man had to have his head covered when he prayed. But it gets all turned around. Now, there are some Christian churches that require a woman to have her head covered and the man not. But that really is kind of like the opposite of what God said. But see, all that was physical. We don't need to worry about dragging all the physical up here to the New Testament. Now, some people won't agree with that, but hey, I'm not here to argue those points. I'm just saying, all of the garments and the vestments and the priesthood and the holiest of holies and the tabernacle and all of those things and the Ark of the Covenant were physical manifestations of what was to come in Jesus Christ. The new covenant did away with the priesthood, the garments, the arks, the covenants, the temples, and all the rest of that. It is now you and God through Jesus Christ. But it's not you as an island, because he said we are the body of Christ. We belong to one another. Read in Romans 12 again. We belong to one another. This is supposed to be a functioning unit, because if you get off by yourself, you're like the little lamb off there, and you're so wide open for the demonic influences and the deceptions that can be there. That's why he clarifies it. He says there's no more of this temple stuff and the priest being higher and the priest being closer to God and the priest being the only ones that can contact God. That was true in the Old Covenant. Jesus died for nothing if he didn't bring a new covenant. And he didn't die for nothing. He died for us. Every single one now has the capacity to be in direct communication with the living God. He said, what I want for them is what we have, God. I and you, and you and me. That is the object. That is the journey. Pursue it. Get it. It's you and him. And when you get all that straight vertically, you can be sure that every horizontal relationship, everyone down here on this plane, it's going to work out, because you got him being your guide and your spirit and your power and your thinking and your wisdom and your comments and your opinion. And all of it's going to be what? Take a look at the priesthood. It's going to be pure. It's not going to be bells banging against each other. It's going to talk of righteousness. It's going to scream of the holiness of God. Our lives need to scream of the holiness of God. So this head covering showed his subjection under God. And Jesus, our head, was always in subjection to his Father. He submitted to his will. He was the walking example of how someone in a physical human body could live with the Spirit of God totally guiding him and submitted to that Spirit and never sinned. Jesus never sinned, even while he was in the flesh. And he is the example that we must follow. Now, this little diadem, this thing here, it's like there's a little plate. You can see here, there's like a little gold plate there, and it was fastened right on the forehead of the high priest. And right on the forehead, you know, it signifies that's where your brain is, right up here in the head. It wasn't around his wrist or his ankle. It was up here on the head where your brain is, where the intellect, where the mind is. And remember, God says your mind is enmity to him. And he says, put on the what? The mind of Christ. On the diadem, there was a plate, and the inscription was, it said, Holy to the Lord. Wow. Boy, that just topped it off. Holy to the Lord. Do you live your life as if that plate was slapped to the front of your forehead? Do you live your life like a sign was on your head saying, Holy to the Lord? Well, the next time you're going to go mouth off, the next time you're going to lie on your income tax, the next time you're going to shove something under the table, the next time you're going to exaggerate a little bit, the next time you're going to cheat, the next time, or anything that comes up in your life, the next time a lie comes up, the next time a curse comes up, the next time impurity comes up, the next time lust comes up, I don't care what it is. May we be reminded, written on our head, Holy to the Lord. Do not commit spiritual adultery to God. Every sin is spiritual adultery. Stop and think of that. The one who loves you, the one who gave his life for you, Jesus, who wants your fellowship and friendship, he wants you to put your head on his shoulder. He wants to comfort you and bless you and keep you and form you and shape you and make all blessings be yours. May we think on, whoa, if I do this, it's really spiritual adultery. I'm going after something other than you and your ways. Oh, God. I tell you, that has over the years really helped me. It has really helped me that I not go after those things. They're going to come up in your life either because of the world, which is others, the flesh, which is you, or the devil, who is Satan. It's going to come up that you have these opportunities, but may it flash before your eyes. I am holy to the Lord. I am the tabernacle. I am the high priest. Not because of anything I've done. Not because of anything I signed up for. Not because I'm here as a member of this church. but because of Jesus Christ, who called me and saved me and washed me and put on his robe of righteousness to me. Remember when we studied the tabernacle, when God looks down from heaven? He doesn't see that black sin. That goat skin was in between. And when the priest looked up, he saw the white linen. He didn't see the black sin. He saw the whiteness and the purity of God. When God looks down, he saw that sealed item over the red goat hair. Boy, I tell you. Or the red ram skin, rather. It was a black goat hair. The red ram skin sealed with that other piece of leather-like stuff. That's all that God's is. It is sealed. Our cleanliness is sealed. You're sealed by the Spirit of promise. What a God we serve. Now, some of you have your handouts, but in Hebrews, it's so powerful. Hebrews 8, verse 1 to 2. I'm just going to say this. You can write it down, or it's in your handout. Read Hebrews 8, verses 1 to 2, not now, verses 6 to 8, and then Hebrews chapter 9, verses 2 to 15, and verses 24 to 28. Boy, I tell you, that tells us, that wraps up the summation of the fullness of the priesthood now, and who Jesus is, and who we are to be, and why he had to do what he did. So may we, I know with a lot of details on this particular teaching, we've completed that for now. I think if, with Pastor Mark's permission, I might start the teaching on the sacrifices and the feasts. That was a real, that's a nice move in to what they actually did in the tabernacle and the meaning of these sacrifices. Oh, it's just as rich, not richer than this. And the meaning of the feasts are actually meanings of these things. People today are just doing the physical still. They're doing the traditional ceremonial celebrations and ablutions and incenses and the feasts and things, thinking that that is going to appease some god far away. That's a pagan mindset. You might as well be throwing children into a volcano. It's ridiculous. Your behavior is not going to appease God for your sin. Jesus Christ was the only one that could do that. You go to him, you come through him, and God will not see you. He'll see his son between you and him. That allows you, because of the righteousness of Jesus, to come into the presence of God. That's what's so powerful. This is not a religion we're teaching. Christianity is not a religion. It is a way of life. Jesus was not just another philosopher born at a certain period of time. He was a planned event of God. He is God. There is no grave. There is no place. All of these prophets, all of these great Confucius and all of this, they all died someplace and they all were buried someplace. Their bones are in the ground. Jesus Christ did something no one else did. He rose from the dead. It was the word picture that happens to us. When you die to the flesh, you will raise up a new creature. You will raise up from death into life. It wasn't just to show some powerful manifestation of God, even though it was. It was to show what happens when you give up your dead life here. You'll get a new one and raise up a new creature. We should have new husbands showing up at home. We should have new wives showing up at home. We should have new children showing up at home. We should have new employers in their businesses. We should have new employees in their businesses. All this should be new in Christ. The whole world should be singing and holding hands. But it's not. I see so few. It is not. Let us continue on the ways of God, doing what God has said, and living that life as a walking tabernacle in this wilderness, as the high priest before God, giving him all the praise, all the honor, and all the glory. God bless you.